This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM.
Education is a universal human right. In Canada, we have intense debates on school curriculum and teaching methods, but we are a country at peace, something that is taken for granted. Now imagine yourself in the West Bank of Palestine, continuously under military occupation, where snipers, tanks, and helicopter gunships are what are taken for granted. How do you organize education in this context? This is the question Dr. Jacqueline Sfer has wrestled with for over 2 decades. She is the director of the Education Development Center at Bethlehem University. She's been in British Columbia to speak at the annual general meeting of the Post-Secondary Educators Union, where she was received with a standing ovation. And yesterday, she spoke at a meeting sponsored by the BC Teachers Federation. This morning, she joins me in the studio. Good morning, Jacqueline, and welcome to Co-op Radio.
Good morning, Mark.
I'd like to start with a day in the life of a Palestinian child. They get up in the morning and they prepare to go to school. What challenges do they face simply getting to school?
Yeah, well, there is almost no norm because every day is a new day and it has its different challenges. So, for instance, if we go on a day where there has the incursion where was happening, like it happened over 2000 to about 2003, a child would not know whether they were going to go to school or not until someone announces that curfew is lifted. Now, what is curfew? Curfew is you can say home arrest. People can't go out. You can't be in the streets. So you're on hold. You don't know. You go to bed, not really knowing whether tomorrow is a school day. And gradually, you start hoping it isn't. Because, you know, for children, it is something they have to develop a routine to just get up and get ready to go to school. So that part was, you know, like, you have to be a child to understand how hard it is to know whether you are or not going to school. So do you have your homework ready? Or what is it going to be? Oh, is it a Tuesday tomorrow? But even if it's a Tuesday, teacher said the next time we come to school, we're going to have math. So, oh, I didn't do my math homework. So this sort of soliloquy kind of situation is what a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old, even a university student goes through. And not only that, the teacher goes through the same process. Because, you know, you could be a teacher in, like, let's say, Bethlehem High School, but you live in Batir, which is like 5-10 minutes drive from Bethlehem. But Bethir is still under curfew while your school area is, the curfew is lifted. So you know that your children are going to be there in school, but you can't be there with them. So you have to make sure someone knows what they're supposed to be doing with their children. You know, by the time this becomes the norm, there's no norm. So neither headmasters, nor teachers, nor parents, nor children know what today is going to be like. You take it an hour at a time, not even a day at a time. So over the past 3 years, now this situation has taken so long that schools have been disrupted, educational processes have been disrupted, you know, because the routine of going to school, the repetition of certain things, the expectations, how you use your time, how you plan your time, those structured days are no longer taken for granted. And then when you make up those days, what are you really making up for? Lost time or lost experiences? So when you accumulate 10 years of disrupted education, What actually are you remediating?
What about the teacher in the classroom? What effect has this long period of occupation over the West Bank had on the capacity of teachers to be competent, I would say, in terms of fulfilling their educational role with the young students?
Yeah, that's a very good one, you know, because when you think of the teachers of today, the ones who have 13 years of experience, lived their secondary education under the conditions of the First Intifada. And the teacher who has 3 years of experience today was a first grader in the First Intifada. Now let's go trace that teacher's history. Her lower elementary years, like grade 1 to grade 4, the schools were almost totally closed. We had alternative education, but it wasn't widespread and not rigorous enough. So those teachers, as young children, did not develop their strategies of learning, and they haven't learned how to be learners. The things that you don't know you're learning just by being in school, by going through the routine, by fulfilling the expectations that were expected from you. Then their fifth grade, all the way to their, like, let's say first secondary, which is like the intermediate school, the education was severely interrupted by strikes on one hand, closures on the other, all sorts of events, the Gulf War, the Hebron massacres, all sorts of political incidents that have interrupted the normal routine of their lives. So that's, again, where they get hit with not having experienced life as a child should in that period of, like, going on field trips, having extracurricular activities, or even curricular activities in a systematic and continuous way. Because, you know, that's when people develop their basic knowledge. That's where they learn about the world around them. That's where they develop their orientations towards what I want to be as an adult. So they went through all of that period in a very, and we're talking the teachers now, those were the children of the First Intifada. So when they reached university level, like, let's say that teacher of 3 years experience, in her second year of university, the Second Intifada hit. And so she had her second, third, and senior year under Second Intifada. There again, her formal education on the undergraduate level has also been disrupted. So now she is the school teacher. So now she is the school teacher of youngsters or middle school. So what does she fall back onto? And that's where I feel that there are a number of issues that have affected the quality of education. And that starts with the quality of life the adults living with children had. Don't forget, those children's parents lived the same realities as their teachers did. Okay, so the gradual erosion of normal living is now becoming the norm, with very little experiences to fall back on, normal experiences to fall back on. And to just give you a sense of what that means, in a study I did, one 13-year-old girl living in Bethlehem was saying, I have no idea what happens when the Israeli soldiers are going to be leaving, because there was this talk about their withdrawal from the occupied territories. And in a way, she was a bit panicking. And I was looking at why? Why should say that? Said, well, you know, that's our playtime. You know, when is the jeep coming? So we will hide and we will throw. So it's like the hide and seek game. To them, this is their life. And she was wondering, you know, what do you do when this doesn't happen?
Such an inversion of war into normalcy. Yeah.
That is the most detrimental aspect. You know, those children are now living with the wall as a matter of fact. They are not used to looking for the horizon. All they see is this cement block, and they learn how to live within it. To me, this is the most devastating aspect of their lives.
I remember accounts of the concentration camps where people surviving in them began to treat that as the normal world, and they lost all sense of their own capacities, humanity. In this enormously tormented situation, how do you take that lived experience and make it into an educational experience which allows children to begin to develop their own capacities and their own humanities?
Well, you know, the children are the people of today. That's all they know. The challenge is how to make those adults living with those children to realize that they have a role beyond just being there for the children. And that's where you have to start digging in deep into your own resources, your inner life, and asking your questions, the real questions about what is life, what's the quality of life, what is it that I want for my child? How can I get my child to be aware of those things without making him frustrated with the day-to-day life? I mean, a prisoner knows he's in prison. A child who is born in prison doesn't know there's a world beyond those walls. And I feel to educate our children to know that there is life beyond the reality is important, but how to do it without making it a frustration, without hurting them beyond the actual reality is hurting them. So I think that's where we work with the adults most, and allow adults to deal with their frustrations, acknowledge them, realize them, work it out for themselves so they can have the inner resources to be positive around the children and stretch that horizon without making it into a frustrating experience. And I tell you, for me, this has been a process that took 21 years. I think I have mastered a level of this sort of regimental sense of, I mean, you have to work at it really hard. You have to remember every day that you should not be that frustrated, that you have to have this positive outlook. You have to have those smiling eyes. You have to have that loving heart. You have to really know that you are the bridge into that life those children deserve to live, and how to be that connection without making those walls real to those children.
You're making real for us a situation in Palestine, and I want to ask you to remove yourself from that and to speak to us in terms of what is it that we here could work towards or focus on as a goal that would in some way contribute to these release of this enormous torment that you're describing.
You know, the blue marble, the world is connected. There are no frontiers. People on Earth, especially today, are one unit. And to help children living in those circumstances like ours, and others. I mean, we're not the only tormented part on the planet. To have children all over the world realize that they can't take life for granted, and educate them for justice, for peace. They need to know that it is their choices, the choices that they make, is what makes the world a better place or a bad place. For everybody, not for them. And I think that's where it starts. it starts with educating those children who are so far removed from those hurt places, from those places that are tormented by all sorts of realities, to know that it is they who would make the world a better place. For us, those who are living in those situations, we have no choice. It is our survival that is at stake. So we keep working at it. But we can't make a difference because we don't have the power. And the people who do have the power are oblivious to the world out there. So I think teaching our children to be citizens of the world, to take responsibility for what's happening, and to refuse to make that world into an ugly place, to make it a place that's human-friendly, is something that is important to be done. So it's the teachers, it's the parents, it's the politicians, it's the journalists, it's all who communicate those messages to the children of the first world, for the children of the third world to have hope in a better future.
Well, that is a message of optimism, but a message of difficult challenges for us here too.
Yeah, well, yes, that's where the monsters lie.
It is true. We are in the belly of the beast, as they say. Thank you very much for coming in this morning. Thank you for coming to British Columbia.
Thank you. It's been wonderful being here. Thank you.
I've been speaking with Dr. Jacqueline Sfair of the Education Faculty of Bethlehem University.
Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.